Hello and welcome. I am your host, Goblin Queen, and tonight we are going to hear a variety of interesting firsthand paranormal experiences. These are all from the website Your Ghost Stories, a forum I have been visiting regularly for years and years. Despite the name, this website by no means contains just ghost stories. I take it upon myself to find the strangest and most interesting, to me at least, accounts I can find on there and read them here for you. In between the stories, I like to provide a few of my own thoughts, read the comments section under each account, because that can often lead to people sharing additional encounters and reveal fascinating cultural perspectives. And it's pretty much guaranteed that we'll be diving into a little folklore as well, or a lot, as these stories so often align with the collective human experience. If all that sounds like a good time to you, let's get started and read our first story. This one was submitted by The Fox and took place in Scotland. It's called Black Dog of Arrochar. My name is James, and I live in a little town on the west coast of Scotland. Last year, my girlfriend and I decided to get married. We wanted a very quiet honeymoon, so we booked a log cabin in a very serene little town called Arrochar, up north. The first night was Halloween 2016. My wife went to bed early. I went to bed after 12. Around 3:30, I was sleeping on my stomach, and I felt something grabbing or trying to bite my calf through the bed sheets. I have three cats at home, one of which has a habit of jumping over my back early hours in the morning to get out. I thought it was my cat, then realized it couldn't be. I'm not at home. I turned to see what it was, and standing in front of the bedroom door was what I can only describe as a large black dog standing on its hind legs. It had the features of a dog, but no eyes. I watched it, and it made a gesture to me with its paw three times, as if to beckon me towards it. I froze for a couple of seconds, then managed to blurt out the words, "Fuck off." Then, all of a sudden, it just disappeared. My wife slept through it. I didn't want to tell her because we still had four nights left. The afternoon of the second day, my wife told me that she thought the place was eerie and she didn't like it. So I eventually told her about what I saw. She wouldn't go into that room herself, so she called our daughter, who considers herself a white witch, as she used to see spirits of her, quote, other mom and dad, who died and has books on spiritual matters. My daughter told me that seeing a black dog was a portent of death and to put certain symbols around the bed. After that, I never saw it again. I contacted the company, but no one else had made any complaints. I later found out that the Arrochar Hotel, straight across the lock, has a green lady and a black dog. All right, there's several elements to dip into here. First of all, it was Halloween. What a lovely time for a honeymoon. And that, of course, is traditionally considered to be a time when the veil between the worlds is thin in Celtic countries. So perhaps that could be a factor in these events. Next, the star of the tale, of course, the black dog. Black dogs are a very common figure in the folklore of Britain, Ireland, and the Isle of Man. They are generally assumed, as the author of the story's daughter said, to be bad omens, harbingers of death, or dangerous, although that's not always the case. There are stories of black dogs peppered throughout Scotland, and they are usually associated with haunted places or considered parts of a haunting, perhaps implying that they are the form the spirit of a deceased person can take on. I'll read a couple of examples of these given in A Gazetteer of Scottish and Irish Ghosts by Peter Underwood. And these are both from the Isle of Tiree, which is located in the same county as Ayrshire. A wild and lonely beach on the northern shore has long been reputed to be haunted by a phantom black dog. It has the unnerving habits of following people and occasionally barking once or twice, a weird, echoing bark never forgotten by those who hear it. If a third bark is heard, according to tradition, the phantom dog will overtake the hearer. The same form has been seen on the moor near Kenavara, crouching near a sand dune. One witness, the morning after he had seen the figure, went to the spot in daylight and discovered the prints of huge paws at the place where he had seen the black dog. A similar ghost dog is said to haunt another part of the island in the southwest, a strange wild place known as Hynish Hill, where it was seen and heard by two boys some years ago. A curious, naked, semi-human form with a grotesque head and face is sometimes seen in broad daylight on a sea-girt rock close to Balvaig. There is on Tiree a cavern known as the Lair of the Fairy Dog. Loud and unexplained barking, as of a huge, dog-like creature, has been repeatedly heard here by the islanders and, occasionally, by visitors. Fairy dogs are something we will get to in just a little bit. The author also mentioned at the end of their story that the Ayrshire Hotel, located across the loch from where they stayed and had their experiences, was reputed to have a black dog. So the Ayrshire Hotel dates back to the late 1600s and has gone by several names in its time, variably known as the Ayrshire House, the Cobbler Hotel, the Claymore Hotel, and the Inverurach House. I'm not sure I said that one right. Websites mention the ghost of a black dog, Green Lady, as well as Vikings allegedly buried on the grounds. But none of them go into any detail about these hauntings whatsoever. Luckily, I did find a couple sources with a little bit of information on the lore. Here's the entry for The Cobbler House in Haunted Places of Scotland by Martin Coventry. The Cobbler Hotel is believed by some to be haunted. The events surrounding the haunting are that the lord of the house came home unexpectedly one morning and discovered his wife in a compromising position with one of his neighbors. In a fury, the lord slew the neighbor, then mortally wounded his wife, who dragged herself along a passageway and died in one of the bedrooms. The lord then hanged himself in despair at what he had done. The spirit of his wife, a green lady, haunted the building, but was only experienced when one of the family was about to die. So, that doesn't mention the black dog, only the green lady. And, if you don't know, I'm obsessed with green ladies. Green ladies are, generally speaking, just ghosts of women wearing green. That's where the green part comes in. It's just usually their dress that they're wearing. Although that's not strictly the case, and we'll get into that in a bit. Often, they'll have died under tragic and untimely circumstances. Such is the case in that story. I did find another source that ties a green lady, seemingly a different one, to Loch Long, the lake on which the Ayrshire Hotel sits, and the one that was referenced in the story we read. This article from a Scottish tourism website relates the following tale. One of the legends associated with Loch Long is the story of the Green Lady of Knockamilly. According to folklore, the Green Lady is believed to be the ghost of a woman named Marian, who lived in a castle near the shores of the loch. Marian's lover went away to fight in a war, leaving her devastated. For many years, she would walk along the shores of the loch, waiting for his return. Unfortunately, he never returned. As time passed, the local people say Marian's spirit continued to roam the area near the loch dressed in green. Her spirit is believed to have lingered in the area to this day. Locals and tourists alike continue to report sightings of her ghostly figure along the shoreline, particularly on moonlit nights. Another thing about Scotland is that you can't throw a stone without hitting a haunted area, and you can see that here, that just within about a 2-mile radius were tripping over ourselves in legends that are very similar, but seemingly different, at least a little bit. What's really interesting to me is the crossover I found of dogs and green. Let us now take a moment to explore the Cú Chi, or fairy dog, of the Scottish Highlands. This is from the Peat Fire Flame, Folk Tales and Traditions of the Highlands and Islands by Alistair Alphen MacGregor. Quote, "Few objects produce more terror among the Isles folks than the Cú Chi, or fairy dog, a creature of ill omen they sometimes encountered on dark nights, moving swiftly and noiselessly from place to place. Fairy dogs are said to be about the size of a 2-year-old cow. For the most part, they are dark green in color, though towards the feet, the green takes on a lighter hue. Some possess long tails, which they coil over their backs. Others have a flat, plaited tail. Their motion is silent and rhythmical, and is always in a straight line. Their bark has been described as a rude clamor. It sounds not unlike that of an ordinary dog, but it is louder. Fairy dogs, they say in the Isles, bark only 3 times. There is usually a fair interval between each bark, which gives to the terror-stricken hearer a chance of making for safety before he hears the 3rd bark. Otherwise, he is liable to be overtaken and destroyed by the fairy dog. The footprints of the fairy dog are said to be very large. Some say they are as broad as the spread of the human hand. They have been traced in snow, in muddy places, and upon the sands." So there was some similarity in what we heard earlier about the phantom ghost dogs, except for the color, right? Those were black and these are green. Can you imagine if you saw a green dog? I did also find an instance of an overlap in dogs and green ladies, which I was very excited about. This concerns a bit of a different kind of green lady, unique to Scotland, called the Glashdig. The Glashdig is not a ghost, but a sort of fairy woman, a mortal woman who, quote, "has been put under enchantments and to whom a fairy nature has been given." These quotes on the Glashdig that I'm going to be reading are from John Gregerson Campbell's Superstitions of the Highlands. "She does don the green dress, and green is traditionally considered the color of the fairies, and was not generally worn by superstitious folk at risk of offending their otherworldly neighbors. The Glashdig is often confused with a banshee, because she will follow certain families, but she is not a messenger of death, but rather, quote, a tutelary being in the shape of a thin, gray little woman with long yellow hair reaching to her heels, dressed in green, haunting certain sites or farms, and watching in some cases over the house, in others over the cattle." So she's kind of a house spirit, and can be protective of an area or over livestock. So I could go on and on, but that is the very basic gist of what a Glashdig is. Anyway, I found reference to a Glashdig in the Peat Fire Flame, located on the Isle of Mull, that took the form of a dog, and would seemingly use this form to herd cattle. It's funny because Glashdig are actually said to dislike dogs, for whatever reason. Alright, I think I digress for now, but I didn't have this Arochar Green Lady logged on my massive document where I'm obsessively noting every instance I can find of a green lady. So, this was an excellent discovery for me, and I really like that story. It gives us a chance to poke around Scotland, which, like I said, is just chock full of legends and beautiful scenery. So, now let's move on to our next story. This one was submitted by Shelsey and took place in Australia. It's called The Thing with the Scissor Legs. I live in Australia, in Melbourne, on the beautiful Mornington Peninsula. It is summer here at the moment, so the days are mostly hot and bright. I was driving to work around 8 a.m., I stopped at a local supermarket to grab something for lunch, so I took a different route to what I would normally take. I left the shops and was approaching a small Anglican church on my left-hand side. As I was getting closer, I saw a very tall black thing emerge from the church entrance and quickly dart across the grass and the church grounds, heading towards the road. My instinct was to slow down, as I expected it to cross in front of my car. I watched it move very quickly, taking long, strange strides across the grass. It reached the end of the church grounds, about to step onto the road, and then just vanished into thin air. It was very tall and thin, with a small head, jet black, with no features. It had no arms that I can recall. As I was driving away in shock, all I could think was, what the heck was that thing with the scissor legs? It then dawned on me that it had no knees and was moving very quickly with straight scissor-like legs, if that makes any sense. I kept looking in my rearview mirror as I was driving up the road, completely confused as to what this thing was and where did it go. A minute up the road, I began to feel very nauseated, to the point I thought I would have to pull over and vomit. I have had few experiences in my life that have made me feel very nervous and uneasy, but nothing has ever made me feel like I want to be physically sick before. Thankfully, the sick feeling passed as I got further away. I've been thinking about it all morning, and I have no idea what I encountered. Was it a ghost, but in a strange form? Or was it something else? Has anyone else ever encountered something with scissor-like legs? Instantly, that story reminded me of the Fresno Nightcrawlers video from 2011, I think it was. If you remember that, it's like some kind of paranormal found footage video that's passed off as real, but I'm not sure if it is or not, of like these white creatures that look like heads on stilts or something walking down a hill. It reminded me of that, except those in the video were white and the thing from the story was black. So, no one else chimes in with any scissor-legged sightings, but someone does comment with what they believe is a similar experience. Dreamer01 says, I was also passing a church early in the morning while it was still dark. The dark figure I witnessed was also running across the church car park, had a distinct head, bent arms, and legs. It looked like it also turned its head before disappearing into the wall of the adjoining property. Luckily, I did not have any type of physical sensations after this strange encounter. I could only hazard a guess and say it was a shadow person slash being that we both experienced. So, yeah, I don't really have any guesses as to what this could have been. I did kind of think of shadow people as well, because they seem to describe it in the same way that people describe shadow people. The blacker than black kind of quality. So let's move on to our next story. And this one was submitted by Frauen and took place in Tennessee. It's called The Man in the Black Hat. This happened in the late 80s or early 90s. My brother and I were on our way home from Prudential Hollow. We'd been there most of the day, just messing around the old homes. Prudential was on land company, and the Hollow was shut down back in 1975, and all the remaining houses burned to the ground. It was getting late, and we decided to head back home, a good half hour to 45-minute walk. We were walking and talking, not paying too much attention to what was going on around us. After all, we had made this walk plenty of times before. We had made it to the head of the Hollow, and were walking up the straightaway that led to Silas Hollow and the turnoff going to our house. We were snapped back to reality when we heard something coming down the side of the hill to our right. We looked to where the sound came from, thinking that it was a wild animal, and saw an old man come off the hillside, step onto the roadway, and start walking toward us. He was wearing a broadcloth-type coat and an old black slouch hat, with the brim shading his face. He walked hunched over, with his hands clenched behind his back. No big deal, just another guy out for a walk. As we neared each other, my brother and I eased to the left so he could pass to the right. We spoke a casual, "Hi, how's it going?" And he muttered and nodded his head as he passed. Both of us felt uneasy, but kept it to ourselves. About a minute passed without either of us saying anything, and I asked my brother if he knew the man, and he said no, that he had never seen him before. We walked for a couple of more minutes when we heard the same noise again and automatically looked to the hillside, and that same man walked off the hill, stepped into the road, and started walking toward us again. This time, we didn't speak, and my brother whispered for me not to look him in the eye. After he passed us the second time, my brother looked at me and said something like, "Frank, something ain't right about this. Let's get out of here as fast as we can." I agreed, and we ran almost to the house. We got within eyesight of the house, and my brother said that he thought we were safe enough now to stop and catch our breath. After we rested a few minutes, we went to his house and sat on his porch and trying to comprehend what had just happened. At the time, we couldn't come up with any answers, so his wife suggested we go talk to our mother. We did, and she told us that the man we saw had been seen by our dad and older brother years before, and that she had no idea of who or what he is. I know it's been over 20 years since I have seen this specter, but I still can't get it out of my mind. Who is he? What is he? What would have happened if I had made eye contact with him? Comments and theories welcome. Okay, let's just dive right into the comments because there are actually a lot of them. Lots of people suggest that it's a residual haunting. One person asks why the OP's brother told them not to look the man in the eye, and Frauen says, "The best I can figure is that in the hills of Tennessee, where I live, is an old saying or an old wives' tale that you don't look an otherworldly being in the eyes, lest it takes control of you. As for it being a residual haunting, it could be, but I always thought a residual couldn't acknowledge you. This thing spoke the first time, but not the second. On the first sighting, he muttered an acknowledgement, but on the second, we didn't speak. This is why I don't think it was residual. Because of the visual sighting, he was aware of us by his acknowledging us when we spoke. We couldn't understand what he said because he was mumbling. The second passing, we didn't speak, and neither did he, but we cut him a wide berth. I did some asking around and found out that the others in my family that have seen this man each saw him in a different location. My other brother saw him at the mouth of Prudential Hollow. My brother and I saw him at the head of Prudential. My nephew saw him in Silas Hollow, which is off of Prudential, and my dad saw him at Phillips Flats. All of these locations are basically on the same road, within 10 miles of each other." So, that is fascinating. The fact that multiple people and their family have seen the same man all along the same road, but in different locations and presumably different times, different generations maybe. There is a possibility that it is just a normal man. I'm not sure what the time span between sightings is, because that would also possibly lend a supernatural air if you see the same man years and years apart and he looks the same. But also in small towns, such as this one, the OP says it's basically a little more than a mud puddle. It's rare that you don't recognize or know who an individual is. Frauen says, "He looked like a flesh and blood human being. If I had seen him just once, I wouldn't have thought twice about him. I would have figured he was just an old man out for a walk, wearing outdated clothing. It was the rapid succession in the two sightings that made the warning bells go off. Nobody could move that fast. I don't care how good a condition they're in." Yeah, so it almost seems like, it almost makes me think of like a glitch in the Matrix or some kind of time loop. He did like the same action twice, but in different locations, and he didn't speak the second time. So there's a little difference in the interaction. So it wasn't like some kind of just a residual loop, like some people were suggesting. Someone in the comments did suggest that maybe it was like the ghost of somebody who worked in the mines or something, if there were mines, which I think Frauen said that there were. And he maybe it was him like walking the line. So that was kind of an interesting idea. So this location, Prudential Hollow, it's a ravine in a heavily wooded, hilly area that's about 30 miles outside of Knoxville, Tennessee. I tried to find any other references online to haunted places and legends and such in that area, but at a glance, I wasn't able to. Anyway, the people in Frauen's family weren't the only ones who claimed to have seen this man in the black hat. I'm sure some people listening thought of the Hat Man when the black hat detail came up. Oh, I did. So let's read this comment from Shelby. I would have been just a little frightened to see this man coming up to you in the coat and a brimmed hat where you couldn't see his face. But then to see it repeat itself, what an experience. You know, in my Shadow Man experiences, he always wore a black coat and a black brimmed hat. It was mostly in darkness, so I wonder if it was a shadow person at all. It was always in full form, not like a shadow on the wall or anything. Maybe he looked totally black because it was in a dark room with only the moonlight shining through the blinds. When my husband was in his late 20s, I believe, he was at work in a warehouse, and he said he saw this cloaked figure, old-timey looking, with a brimmed hat coming towards him. His first instinct was to swing his fist at this thing, but it disappeared. I would really love to know who this or these entities with the black coat and black brimmed hat are. So this story and these comments are from 2008, and I want to say that the whole Hat Man thing hadn't really caught fire yet into the phenomenon that it is today. Could be wrong about that. Maybe I just wasn't aware of it yet. I'm not a Hat Man expert, but I wonder what exactly constitutes what is a Hat Man experience and what's not. Does it have to be a sleep paralysis? Does it have to be a shadow person? Or is it just an entity wearing a black hat? There is one more comment I would like to read, and it says, "My name is Steve, and I live in Perth, Western Australia. I have met the man in the black hat. For years, I have searched on Google for any reference to this being. Tonight, I found this. The man in the black hat I met in a very awful bar when looking after a guy in a wheelchair who drank at this place every Thursday afternoon. He introduced himself as the man in the black hat. I took little notice until he said my name, smiled, then added, 'I'm here all the time, but not always as you see me now. I'll be watching you and catch you later.' This was no nice spiritual experience. To me, he made it very clear who he was, and if you have had the same person, you know exactly what I mean. Get back to me if this rings true for you." Sounds to me like Steve met the devil. Unfortunately, the OP never got back to Steve on his comment. So, let's move on to our next story. This one was submitted by Dina and took place in Ireland. It's called The Hooded Figure. My story begins when I was 9. My mom and I were going to Wexford to visit my cousins. Wexford is the heart of the country, and a little bit eerie when you're used to the hustle and bustle of Dublin. We did this every year for my school break, as I'm an only child and loved having my cousins to play with. I had two cousins at the time, both girls, Trisha and Jamie. We spent the days playing in the fields and just having fun. One day, my cousin Trisha was telling me about a really scary old graveyard. I loved all the scary and weird stuff, so I convinced Trisha and Jamie to go to the graveyard with me. We walked for what seemed forever through this big field until in the distance I could see a small little shed. As we grew closer to the shed, we saw it was extremely small and made of tin. Walking closer, we then saw this black shape on top of the shed. It took a moment for our eyes to adjust, but what we were seeing was truly horrible. The shape was that of a man in a black cloak. No face was visible under his hood, only two flame red eyes. He had in one hand a large stick and a cat on his other side. I know this all sounds terribly cliche or like something from a Vincent Price film, but I swear to you, this is what I saw. I stared for what felt like an eternity, and eventually plucked up the courage to turn my back to the being and run. My cousins were already halfway up the field, running in fear. I daren't turn around, as I was terrified the being would follow us, so I just ran as fast as I possibly could. When we finally reached the house, we tried to explain to our parents what we had seen, but it was seen as childish silliness or make-believe. But we knew what happened. We couldn't forget. Years have passed since that incident, but I can remember it as clear as yesterday. We later found out a man had hung himself from a tree next to the shed not long before we had seen the figure. I'm not sure if that has any relevance, but it's interesting. Alright, so, another strange, black-garbed man on the road. But, unlike the last story we read, this being definitely had more of a supernatural look and feel about it. Glowing red eyes, a staff, and a cat. Sounds like a warlock or something. Speaking of the previous story, the OP actually comments here. These were both posted in 2008. And says, "Do you think that it is possible that your parents were right? That it could have been a case of imagination gone wild? I'm not disputing or trying to belittle your experience, but you were 9 years old, a prime age for active imagination." And Dina, the witness to this story, replies, "I totally agree with your theory, and in any other case, I would have second thoughts, but I totally remember every detail of that day, and I never really had an overactive imagination." Food for thought, though. I was reminded by my mom that the week we had seen that, there was a case of birds, crows, as I recall, falling dead from the sky. Now that's some classic Freudian fodder there, the raining dead crows. All I really knew what to do to look into that at all was just kind of Google that. 2008 Wexford, raining dead birds, and I didn't come up with anything, but there are a couple of comments where people express having experienced similar things. Shelby says, "I had the same experience. I just posted my story about this. I was 5 and woke to see this man in a black hooded cape with 2 red eyes looking at me. He kind of looked like a witch, and his skin was green." So they did indeed post about this, and a couple of other anecdotes about experiences that they've had. And what they wrote about is quite brief, so I'll just go ahead and read it. Their story is called Unexplainable Things. And about this caped being, they wrote, "The first experience that I can remember was when I was about 5. I was sleeping with my parents in their bed when I woke. I looked to see a man in this black hooded cape who had red eyes. He looked at me in hate. Not too long after this, I was in the bathroom taking a bath. I looked across the hall. There he was again, just staring at me, sitting on my parents' bed." Another comment from K. Zerby says, "I have seen a figure similar to the one you describe outside my window as a young child. It had long, dark fingers that caressed the pane with an eerie silence. I ducked under the covers and never saw it again. Since that time, I've been followed by what I believe to be shadow beings. Thank you for sharing the story. I, too, believe that you made a wise decision not to confront this entity." That one kind of reminds me of Creepshow and the hooded ghoul that floats outside the window. Very spooky. All of these experiences are very spooky and kind of have, I don't know, they were all had by children, and they all kind of have this boogeyman imagery to them, or like an evil warlock, or Shelby said that it looked like a witch. I don't know if there's something to that, but there is something very, almost like a stereotypical evil entity to these beings. So, I checked the paranormal database page for County Wexford in Ireland, and the only hooded figures reported there are of ghostly monks, and I don't think that this was a monk. I think there's something distinctive about a monk when you see one. And I did kind of poke around books I have on Irish folklore and legends, and I didn't see anything similar to this story. I do want to have a look at the school's collection, but I'll probably have to do that another time. So for now, I'm going to move on to our next story. And this was submitted by Skade. I'm not sure exactly how you say it because they are from Sweden, so I'm sure there's some pronunciation that I'm not getting right there, but the story is called Extra Child in Bed. This is about an experience that I don't know how to categorize, but you might find interesting. I have had paranormal experiences thrice apart from this, so I believe in these things, but I am in no way psychic or gifted. I live in the outskirts of a big city, in a flat right next to an old burial mound, something which is not unusual around here because there have been settlers since the Stone Age. It is a new apartment with a friendly feel to it. 2 years ago, I was sleeping in bed with my young children. I tend to semi-wake up at night to pull up the covers if they've kicked them off, or comfort them if they're dreaming. This night, I was very tired. I woke up to find one of them had migrated to the foot of the bed. I hauled the child in so it wouldn't fall off the bed, and took it in my arms to transfer it back to its pillow, but it wasn't my child. I should mention I have blackout curtains in my bedroom to keep out the midsummer night light. In winter, it gets so dark in the room you can see nothing whatsoever. The child felt very strange to the touch, like those old thick TVs when you had watched them until late, and you turned the TV off and you could pet the static with the back of your hand. It felt like touching something real, but not quite. This felt like that, but way more dense. It was warm and limp, like children are when heavily asleep. I examined it, and it was like static electricity all over, but the head was not really there, only a big, vague ball of less solid, whatever it was. It was bigger than my children, like a 4 to 5-year-old, long, skinny arms and legs, but not unhealthy. I sat on the bed, groggy and confused, and I leaned over while still holding it and tried to turn on the light, but it wouldn't work. I became a little more lucid after that, but I was not afraid, as it didn't feel hostile at all. I knew it was a ghost, and it wanted to share a bed with us because it looked cozy, and it wanted me to be its parent, too. It didn't speak or move, so I don't know how I knew that. I sat with it a while, wondering what to do. I remember clearly the feeling of a warm, heavy, static body. It was so distinct, and it just went on. I felt sorry for it, but knew, as if that was a normal everyday fact, that the dead and the living couldn't mix. Then things became weirder, because I heard girls playing outside our bedroom door. I opened it, but it was not my short, cluttered hallway, but something I could not see, only sense. It had the feeling of a big space stretching away to the sides, farther than the apartment complex itself. I put the child on the floor, and I closed the door, although I felt bad. Then I lay down between my real children and went back to sleep. I'm saying I can't categorize this experience because the latter part, not being able to turn on the lights, and the space outside my bedroom door, which is more consistent with spirit walking or dreams. Also, my complete lack of fear was strange. Were I to meet a ghost right now, I would not be terribly afraid unless it was angry, but I wouldn't be that calm either. But I've never had a dream with such realistic physical sensations, nor one that kept its shape so consistently or was minimalistic like that. I've never had a dream without visuals either, and for the majority of it, there were no changes. Just me sitting confused at the foot of my real bed in my real room with this being. That is such a unique story. I can't blame the author for not feeling like she could categorize it. I particularly love the bit about her hallway becoming some weird, vast, stretched place. It gave me the sense that her doorway opened onto another dimension for a moment there, and it was there she was able to deposit this strange, otherworldly child. To me, initially, the extra child was a bit creepy. It felt like static and had this vague, dense shape about it that the witness instantly perceived as a sleeping child, already having two of her own in bed. And something about it made me think of changelings. Not that I think this was a changeling, I don't know, it's just, I think it was because changelings are often described as looking a little off than a human child. Maybe something had deposited the child into bed with her, and it really was some discarded spiritual child. Anyway, so since I was thinking of changelings, and since I'm really only familiar with the Irish and British stories of changelings, it did make me want to take a peek at the Swedish traditions of these tales. Turns out they're really quite similar. So in Sweden, changelings are called vortbiting and are deposited in cradles by trolls who swap their own offspring for the human newborn. It soon becomes clear to the parents that the child in the crib is not the same one its mother bore, as it howls incessantly, grows ugly and misshapen, and eats to no fulfillment. Once you suspect your child is a changeling, you naturally have to torture it. Whip it, pinch it, hold it over the fire on a shovel, which will then send the troll mother running in saying, "I have never treated your child so badly, and I have never thought to do it such harm as you have abused mine," calling the human mother a cow and returning her child. Rightfully so. What a way to treat an infant, right? And we can now glean, sadly, that most cases of quote-unquote changelings were probably children with birth defects and diseases. Hell, maybe they were just hungry. And these folktales hint that many poor young children may have faced grave abuse for no reason at all. There are, however, some precautions you can take so that you never need inflict such torture on a child, human or otherwise. According to Swedish folklore, you can keep a child safe by keeping the fire going in the room where the baby sleeps until they are baptized, never allowing it to go out. Or you can insert a steel needle into the baby's diapers. Not into the baby itself, just in the cloth. It seems, just like Irish fairies, Scandinavian trolls can't stand metal. Here is a kinder approach to caring for a changeling by Norwegian poet Haldis Moren Vesaas. "Rockabye, rockabye, big, ugly child. Troll is your surname, no doubt. The hugest boiler is in use as we speak, no less to silence your trout. The cradle you lie in will soon be too small. This hardship sure takes its toll. You are heavy, so heavy, and the night is so long for she who must cradle a troll. All that see you give me advice that I should torment you, kick and toss. Then they will come for you, and I can get back the long-lost child I've lost. Rockabye changeling, big and foul, please keep the fear at bay. I will not hit you, trust me on that, and no one shall take you away. The other, the cutie, can stay where she is, while you, who is hated so deep, needs me to love and care for you. And look, now you've fallen asleep." Very nice. And that's the approach that Skade, the author of the story, took as well. She treated the strange extra child in her bed with maternal care, even though she knew it was not of this world. Many people in the comments express sadness and concern for the extra child, thinking that it was some sort of lost child, or maybe a future child to come into her life at some point. Let's read this interesting response that Scotty gives in the comments. "To answer some old comments, I chose my username after Skadi, the Norse goddess of winter." I just thought that was interesting. And I looked up that goddess and she's pictured skiing, which is very cool. Anyway, back to the comments. "For those feeling sorry for the child, I didn't add this before because it was definitely not a haunting. But a couple of months after this experience, I had a dream that I got a package. It had a note that said the osteology department where I used to study was spring cleaning and had found a box of haunted bones that they thought I would be interested in taking care of, as you do. It was this old wooden box with the disarticulated bones of a child inside, and they could speak like a normal child. The dream itself was the usual vague nonsense, if a bit unusually morbid, but I remember the bones and the voice were very vivid. This time, I decided, mentally rolling up my sleeves, that yes, to heck with it, all children are important, and being a disembodied voice haunting bones was really just a special need when you thought about it. I was going to parent this one too, and get him or her into kindergarten and school, no matter what the bureaucratic problems, because even in the dream, I understood there would be such with a ghost adoption. And, I thought, my kids are brave and compassionate, so they wouldn't mind this sibling. After that, I've never dreamt of an extra child again. If there was indeed some outside influence affecting me, maybe it was satisfied. Very, very interesting. I'm really glad they shared that dream. Scotty seems like such a lovely mother. Also, I must note that she said her apartment is located near a burial mound, which are, of course, quite often steeped in legend and lore. I came across a post from 2021 on a website called Thicket Quest about some stories regarding burial mounds in Skåne, Sweden. First, they talk about a mound called Brittisduhög, which Google tells me translates to mining pile, and it has a single old oak growing from the crown of it. Quote, "Locals say that the place is haunted. There's a folktale about a calf that sometimes comes to the farm next door and likes to help women who live there. Around Christmas time, people light candles by the mound too." End quote. Next, they refer to an area called Steglarp's Burial Mound, which contains 12 Bronze Age burial mounds. Quote, "This grave field is one of the best preserved burial mound complexes in the Nordic region. The mounds are between 15 to 20 meters in diameter, while the two most prominent ones, named Bulmer's Mounds, are 25 meters wide. 20 church towers can be observed from the mounds, and an ancient dirt road still runs among them. A local tale says that during Christmas Eve, trolls can be seen dancing under the three golden pillars on the biggest mound. Another folktale mentions a supernatural hare, Hergfellaheren, or the mound trap hare, that lives among the mounds and drives hunters into their demise. The tale goes, once the hare appeared in a potato field, and a farmer, protective of his crops, fired two shots at it. The man clearly saw that the hare got shot, but it continued to run as if nothing had happened. The farmer decided to follow through and fired twice more at the hare. Yet again, the hare continued to run unharmed. The farmer got frightened and went home. Shortly afterwards, he fell ill and died 6 months later. Another young man discovered that it was the Hergfellaheren that the late farmer tried to hunt down. He wanted to try his luck with the trickster hare too. So he tore off one of the silver buttons from his shirt and loaded the rifle with it. He succeeded, and the hare was finally killed. When the man approached to examine it closely, he saw that it was just three wooden sticks and an old boot." End quote. So amazing. You have to wonder what stories are tied to the mound near Scotty's home. So I was not aware of that website that I just read from, but it seems really awesome. I need to poke around a bit more, but it is self-described as a wanderings journal regarding ancient landscapes and peculiar things around Sweden. And it has absolutely stunning photographs. The link to the article I read from is in my source list, but the website is called Thicket Quest. I love that name too. So if any of those things interest you, I would definitely check it out. Okay, I think we have time for one more story. This next one was submitted by Manifon and took place in Illinois. It's called The Face in the Tree. This incident took place around 18 years ago, when I was 30 or 31. At that time, I was living with my wife in a coach house in the town of LaGrange, Illinois. The coach house had, 100 years earlier, been part of a large estate with winding, interconnected lagoons. Sometime in the early 1960s, the larger property was rezoned and subdivided into four lots. The main house remains, fronting one block, while the coach house, on the next block, became two residences. My wife and I lived on the second floor. We lived in the house for 12 and a half years. One of the reasons we moved in was because of the heavily overgrown nature of the property. Oak, maple, and mulberry trees surrounded the house, as well as a large garden and greenhouse. It was, in many ways, cut off from the world around it. Visitors often commented how it felt like a hidden garden. The upstairs apartment was small but very cozy, and there was a back room that had French doors that led out onto a small balcony, which overlooked the wooded backyard and the houses that now separated the coach house from the main house. I would like to state at the outset that the following account is something that, up to now, I have never discussed with anyone besides my wife. Frankly, it is unique in the several unexplained paranormal incidents in my life. I realized, while initially writing up my memories of the event, that some may find it akin to a hallucination brought on by psilocybin, but I certainly hadn't had any. It was very late on a midsummer night. My wife and I had had a few friends over earlier in the evening, and after she went to bed, I decided to step on the porch for a few minutes. I had had a few drinks during the night, but nothing that would have caused what I would soon see. I sat down, enjoying the night and the mild breeze that was stirring. After sitting outside for 15 minutes or so, my attention was drawn to a silver maple tree to the right of the balcony. The closest boughs of this tree were 10 or so feet away, and there was only the slightest wind, when suddenly a very leafy bough seemed to move forwards towards me within 4 feet away. I was transfixed on it, calm, but I sensed something unusual was happening. A face made up of the green of the leaves was joined by ochre, sepia, umber, and dark yellow. Colors seemed to emanate from the bough itself, and no better way to describe it, there appeared a round, full face with a broad and full smile, equally smiling eyes, a small nose and ruffled hair around the forehead and the sides of the head. A branch below this head extended towards me as an arm and hand would, and I felt compelled to touch it. The smile on the face before me seemed to broaden further. I felt a rush of adrenaline and a strange sense of unity with something secret and beautiful when I extended my hand and touched the branch. It's important for me to emphasize that as striking this event may seem while reading it, that it unfolded subtly when it occurred. Odd as it may sound, the way the face appeared came like the wind itself. It was very emotional, and the atmosphere felt charged. Not with electricity, but with a wild feeling of the interconnectedness of thoughts, emotion, and, for lack of a better word, souls. The branch then retracted in unison with the face dissipating. I can't say there had been light emanating from the face, but there was something about the colors it was composed of that delineated it clearly. When it had vanished, the night seemed as it had been before, quiet with the lightest of breezes. I felt somehow revitalized and connected to a mostly hidden aspect of the world. I remember thinking for days after the occurrence that I wished everyone could experience the same thing, something akin to the soul of a tree. That is such a beautiful story. I know myself and any other lover of nature and trees would love to experience something similar. I already personify trees that I feel especially connected to. So to actually see a face attached to a tree, that would be so, so amazing. I've always wished I could talk to a tree because, you know, ones that have been around for hundreds of years, it would just be so interesting to just to know what the consciousness of a tree is like. Because, you know, it has to be different from a human's, but you can't really perceive how it's different. When I first read the title of the story, I thought of those little eyes and noses and mouths that some people probably buy at like a garden shop and tack onto the trunks of trees to give them a sort of face. But this was quite different. This was like a colorful projection of a human-like face. I kind of thought of like a watercolor image that seemed to emanate from the tree. It's not what you would expect. This doesn't seem like something that could be confused with pareidolia of leaves or bark. There was all these vibrant colors and movements, and it was dark out. So what would cause that kind of vibrancy of colors in the darkness? I don't know. Someone refers to this face or this entity in the comments as a greenkeeper, and I really like that phrase. That's cool. That makes me wonder, though, is it then the spirit of the tree that they saw, or is it the spirit of something that is tied to the tree? So often you hear that fairies or elves or nature spirits guard or inhabit trees. So was it actually the face of the tree or something connected to the tree? Well, with that, I think our evening shall draw to a close. Thank you so much for tuning in and taking the time to listen to these stories with me. At the time of this recording, we just entered a new year, 2025, and I am very excited to create and share as much as possible in this year, and also really grateful for everyone who has lent me their ears up to this point. And if you do feel like popping over to YouTube and leaving me a comment, I really love reading those too. You can also send me an email at goblinquain@gmail.com. But until next time, take care of yourself. Happy New Year, and have a pleasant evening. Good night.